Foundation. Foundation and Empire. Second Foundation. Author, Isaac Asimov. Part number one. Part title, Psychohistory and Encyclopedia.
You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. We just went to space. I am Charlie in the studio with Amit, Amanda, Wendy, Cody, and Matthew. It's almost a full house. Each week on Lost in the Stacks, we pick a theme and then use it to create a mix of music and library talk. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
That's right, Charlie. Our show today is called An Archive of Planet Earth.
That sounds really serious.
It is. My archivist colleague Amanda Pellerin and I talked with Nova Spivak, a venture producer who combines his experience as a serial entrepreneur, investor, and technologist to fund and incubate breakthrough companies.
Spivak is co-founder and chairman of the ARC Mission Foundation, an organization that's bringing people together to work on a billion-year backup of humanity.
Wow. If you want to join the conversation, the hashtag for this show is LITS424 for Lost in the Stacks, episode 424. Feel free to tweet your thoughts, questions, or long-term missives with that hashtag.
And our songs today are about extreme locations, billions of years, and Isaac Asimov. The ARC Mission is preserving our past and present so that in the future we, or perhaps some other intergalactic being,
don't freak me out, man,
can remember where we came from, what we knew, how successfully we navigated into our future. So let's start with Gotta Make Their Future Bright by The First Gear right here on Lost in the Stacks.
Seas keep a flowing, although the world has changed. Trees keep a growing on every hill and range. Years pass me by like the pages of a book. Broken promises mount like pebbles in your brook. Men keep a dying and still the world rolls on. Men keep a lying, they're forgotten when they're gone. Time destroys most what man creates. In this troubled world, make your love last, not be hates. Men are willing, I think, to learn wrong from right. Men will stop killing when they've got no more to fight. When you're through with wars and you had a good bite out of life, a rover for your children, gotta make their future bright. Dear Lord, gotta make their future bright. Gotta make their future bright.
That was Gotta Make Their Future Bright by The First Gear here on Lost in the Stacks. Today's show is called An Archive of Planet Earth. Wendy and I have interviewed Nova Spivak, co-founder and chairman of the ARC Mission Foundation, last week. We began by asking Nova to describe the moment when he realized that this was what he wanted to do.
Oh, that's a great question. Well, actually, I've been thinking about building this library since I was a kid. And it actually started when I was around 8, and I had a dream, actually, in which I saw a sort of future of civilization in which we were doing this. And the dream happened after someone gave me a very large blank, must have been at least a 1,000-page dictionary-sized book. It was a really large hardbound book that was completely blank, which was my favorite gift that I ever got, because I just used to sit around thinking about what am I going to fill this book with, you know, and I didn't want to mess it up. So I gave it a lot of thought, you know, what am I going to put in this giant, beautiful, green, hardbound blank book? Sometime after I received that book as a gift, I had this dream in which humanity was building this backup. And, you know, I was a kid. So it was a pretty amazing dream. I still remember it. And I think that was when that's my first memory of really thinking about this. And then later, you know, I built a bunch of companies and sites and apps related to semantics and knowledge management and collective intelligence and search. So I stayed on this theme of knowledge and eventually came back to this idea of, well, would it be possible to, for example, put the Wikipedia on the moon for safekeeping? And at first that was just a sort of a fantasy, really. But then I just kept coming back to it and thinking about it and eventually started seriously looking for technologies that could do that. And it turned out, you know, that was not easy. And so, you know, as we went down that path, eventually, we formed the ARC Mission Foundation to sort of seriously try to figure this out and build this back up. The ARC Mission Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit charity, which has a mission to build and maintain and distribute a backup of planet Earth.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned sort of the origins of this idea in your childhood. Any connection that you have or have had in the past to sort of science fiction and how reading it or exploring those worlds has impacted your work with the foundation?
So actually, I've always been a Trekkie. And in fact, I was such a Trekkie that while I was in college at Oberlin, I did a winter term as a production assistant on Star Trek The Next Generation. So, of course, Star Trek influenced my thinking. Also, you know, growing up in the 70s in the Boston area, there was a lot of awareness of early environmentalism. I remember also a science fiction film called Silent Running, which you may have seen, which was a kind of a cool eco science fiction film about saving the remnants of Earth's biosphere in the future. The Isaac Asimov Foundation trilogy, of course, has been very influential, not only for me, but for many. Arthur C. Clarke, 2001, and some of his other writings were also, you know, relevant to this idea of monolith and, you know, helping to catalyze humanity's development. Of course, many of these threads, I think, influenced my thinking around this. Carl Sagan's thinking, the Pioneer discs, Voyager, of course, were very interesting as well. So there are many influences that I can look to that kind of helped me form the idea. I certainly didn't come up with it myself. I think it really is something that comes from many other threads that others have thought of before me. If there's anything that I did that's novel, it's really coming up with this very distributed, highly redundant strategy where we'll put many copies of these archives in many places so that we can increase the probability that some of them will make it into the distant future and eventually be findable.
Just a follow-up question there. Georgia Tech actually has a science fiction collection in our archives. It's one of our special collections curatorial areas. Mm. So we do have Asimov articles and books and stories that he wrote. I was wondering if there were any particular themes. And it can be in Asimov's writings or someone else where you were really connecting those themes in the science fiction to the foundation.
I think the Foundation trilogy and, you know, Harry Seldon and Encyclopedia Galactica are, you know, a direct example of a theme in science fiction that influenced us in many ways. And for most of our existence as an organization, we've said we're trying to build foundation. We're trying to actually make the foundation as envisioned in the Foundation trilogy. You know, that said, we can point to lots of other examples. I mean, there've been Star Trek episodes where, you know, they've talked about these ideas of backups and archives. Similarly, you can look to hard science fiction and many other examples where either the relics of other civilizations or the remnants of our civilization, I mean, even Planet of the Apes, you know, the last scene in the Planet of the Apes film where the torch of liberty is sticking out of the ground on the beach. I mean, these themes, you know, recur in science fiction, and the themes are usually about the fact that our civilization, as grand as it might be, you know, will be basically lost without a trace if we lose power or there's some extinction level event on Earth. Most of what we've made, most of what we have or know is more ephemeral than we'd probably like to believe, and certainly a lot more ephemeral than civilizations that have come before us.
Included on the Foundation's vision page is a quote from you: wherever humanity goes, so shall go the archive. Wherever goes the archive, so shall go humanity. We were wondering, what is the archive to you?
The archive is the collection that we're building of all these different data sets and resources, which we're then replicating, updating, and sending to these various different locations. So the archive is a broad term that refers to the total amount of corpora that we're aggregating and distributing. It's not one specific narrow thing. It's really the full collection.
Part of the Foundation's vision is for humanity to become a, quote, knowledge civilization. And you mentioned knowledge earlier as sort of this theme that's been present throughout your work. Can you describe what you think of in terms of what knowledge civilization means?
A knowledge civilization, to me, is a civilization that holds the pursuit of knowledge as the highest ideal or goal of civilization. And that's quite different, for example, from a civilization that might be focused more on conquest of land or ownership of wealth or resources. You know, knowledge is a much more abstract thing than, say, you know, oil. And when I look at certain civilizations in the past, you can compare them in terms of how much they valued knowledge. I mean, if you think of ancient Greece, there was great respect for philosophy and learning and the arts. Another example would be classical Tibetan civilization or even classical Chinese civilization. Many of these classical civilizations evolved with enough sort of isolation that they were able to kind of reach a very high level of refinement and thought about their own thinking and their cultures. And that resulted in academic traditions as well as, you know, really active, vibrant philosophy schools that were really woven deeply into everyone's day-to-day life. It was part of the culture. You know, if I look at our current American civilization here in America, I don't really see that as our highest ideal or even something that is widely respected today. If anything, this concept of objective truth or facts, you know, is really an endangered idea in the present environment we are in. So I think that a knowledge civilization is a civilization that really systematically collects, analyzes, refines, and shares knowledge, and that the purpose of that type of civilization is to get more knowledge and to make that knowledge better and, you know, a more accurate, comprehensive understanding of the world and of who we are. I would even go beyond that and say that in order to really be a knowledge civilization, you really have to have learning and teaching be sort of the most important things that society can do instead of, say, defense, for example. Today, you know, teachers probably have the most important job in society, but they are compensated perhaps worse than most other jobs. And so there's a real contradiction between, you know, how we take care of education and its value. And that, you know, for example, shows the distance we ourselves have to go to really become a knowledge civilization.
Nova, who would you say is the intended recipient, users, or audience of the initiatives of the Foundation, like the Billion Year Archive or the ARC Library devices?
So we did not design this for aliens. We designed this for us, or beings who are cognitively equivalent to us, meaning they have some form of symbolic written language. They can communicate with one another using language. They are capable of critical thought. They're self-aware, a higher form of intelligence that probably uses tools and has language. We had to make some assumptions about our intended audience in order to constrain the scope of what we were doing to make it actually achievable. We're not designing for jellyfish that don't have language and exist in another dimension. It really is constrained to human-like intelligence, whatever that is. It might be, you know, our descendants in a few thousand years, or it might be a new form of intelligent life that turns out to be similar to us, that evolves in 500 million years or a billion years in our solar system.
This is Lost in the Stacks, and we'll be back with more about archiving planet Earth with Nova Spivak after a music set.
File the set under BD450.R70. 73, that is.
She packed my bags last night, free flight.
That was Rocket Man, a live performance from 1972 by Elton John. That was a song about things that will take a long, 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 long time.
This is Lost in the Stacks, and our guest today is Nova Spivak, co-founder of the ARC Mission Foundation. All archives grapple with questions of what to preserve. On the sponsorship section of the ARC Mission website, it says, "We reserve the sole right to decide what to include or exclude in the archives based on our library curation policies." Wendy and I asked Nova to describe those curation policies and who defines them.
Well, it's a very difficult topic that we've grappled with a lot. If we're appointing ourselves as the archivists of this backup copy of humanity, first of all, what gives us any legitimacy, and how can we justify our approach in a way that is likely to be accepted by all these different perspectives and belief systems around the world? The first thing we realized was that, you know, our job is to curate the curators rather than, for example, be the curators ourselves. And so we're working at a meta level, at least as a first step, to collect large collections that have been prepared by other curators who are respected, at least as a first step. And so there, for example, the Wikipedia, whether you like it or not, you know, has broad participation, warts and all, but it has broad participation. Similarly, there's a large collection of books in Project Gutenberg. There's a large collection of resources in the Internet Archive. The Long Now Foundation with the PanLex project in Rosetta have gathered and curated a large set of languages and the data about how to translate between those languages. So as a first step, we've been looking to these reference resources or collections, not only reference, but that, you know, are quite broad and curated by others. We've also consulted with library scientists and gotten their opinions and recommendations. And some private library collections have been contributed to us, which were curated by others to be quite broad and include broad selections. Now, one of the things that we've been careful about is to try to include many languages and to represent, you know, all the different nations and ethnic groups and belief systems throughout history. Now, to do that well, you know, it's extremely difficult, as you know, partly because not all of these traditions even have written records that are equivalent to those of other civilizations. For example, we spent quite a bit of time on indigenous peoples. You know, a lot of their traditions are oral, and so they're at a disadvantage if it has to all be written. So these are some things we think about. In terms of policies, what to include, what not to include, we debated this quite a bit. Should we send, for example, information that might enable somebody to build a nuclear weapon in the future? If we go down that rabbit hole of trying to edit, you know, the knowledge, first of all, it's a never-ending battle. It's deeply biased no matter how you do it. And it's also not really respecting whoever it is in the future who finds this. You know, our feeling is we should give them the facts, but let them make their own decisions or come to their own conclusions about what the facts say. To give them the facts, we have to give them the alternative facts, the different perspectives as well. So not just one perspective. For example, the Wikipedia, you know, it has many perspectives, but it's not, for example, as rigorously professionally edited as certain other encyclopedias. We were able to include some other encyclopedias and many other reference works as well that were provided to us. And they provide, you know, different perspectives on the same thing. So our decision ultimately came down to, let's provide a broad, you know, as broad as possible selection of perspectives on every topic. And in terms of the topics, we built a taxonomy that was based on the Britannica taxonomy and also included changes and additions to the taxonomy that came from Library of Congress and many other taxonomies that we looked at. It's not exactly the same as any other taxonomy, but it includes, I think, all of the major areas that these taxonomies include. So that gave us a roadmap, and the taxonomy is actually in our white paper. It's really just a top level of the taxonomy, but it shows the subject areas that we wanted to cover. And I think to varying degrees, we've covered them all. I can't say it's perfect or that we've covered each topic as well as every other topic. That's very hard to measure, and it will take a long time. But certainly there are, you know, hundreds to thousands of different resources on every major topic at that top level.
The technology that goes into capturing the content for the archive, can you talk a little bit more about what goes into creating that technology, specifically the ARC library devices? What are they and where are they?
So the first thing that we had to solve when thinking about ultra long-term archiving is how to make these archives durable for millennia or longer. And as we started to explore this and look at the existing archival technologies that exist today, you know, we found obviously microfiche and the whole kind of microfilm world, which, you know, from a durability perspective, isn't sufficient for our needs. You know, microfiche is certified for about 50 years, requires HVAC, and certainly isn't durable under the kind of extreme potential conditions that we might need to survive. Space adds a whole other dimension. If you want to have an offsite backup and put things in space, you also have to deal with radiation and extreme temperature. So that wasn't sufficient. We also looked at M-Disc technology, which is a type of archival DVD. We even spoke to the inventors. And, you know, M-Disc technology is sufficient perhaps for Earth in the 1,000-year timescale. It won't last for millions of years because they still are carbon-based and will gradually decay. And they don't work for space applications because the heat and radiation would degrade them. And when that happens, even though the data is in a non-carbon-based layer, it is so thin that without the polycarbonate materials, it falls apart and the data is lost. Another issue when we looked at all the forms of digital storage is future-proofing the data so that it could be recovered in the distant future. As we looked at that, we realized, well, we can't assume that they have digital computers or that if they have those computers, that they have our operating systems and software. Even on the scale of decades, we see various forms of media become increasingly difficult to recover. Even VHS recordings, for example, I don't have a way to recover those, and those are only a few decades old. So to future-proof this, we had to go beyond just digital storage. We started with digital on our first mission using quartz crystals. But, you know, it's digital and very exotic, and there is no easy way to recover that today. We then evolved to using a new technology called nickel nanofiche. It's actually similar to microfiche, but it's in pure films of nickel that basically don't degrade. They don't have any half-life. You know, electromagnetic radiation can't harm them. They're completely static and inert. If you etch into nickel, which is what we're doing, using basically nano etching technology, we can make images that you can see with a microscope, a relatively low powered microscope that we could have built in the 1700s. And so what we realize is, at least for a major piece of these archives, we want to use analog images, actual pictures of pages or diagrams or other images that can be read, assuming that the recipient at least has eyes and has simple optics. That way, we remove the barrier of them having to have a digital computer or be able to decode our particular encodings. We worked with a particular inventor named Bruce Haw who developed nanofiche, and we built this stack where there's layers of Nanofiche, the first four layers are analog and have 60,000 analog images at 300 dpi on those layers. And that comprises what we call the primer, which teaches approximately a million ideas or concepts with diagrams that have callouts that connect to different languages. Those little expressions, which are tied to pictures, then connect to the terms in the various dictionaries, encyclopedias, and also the PanLex and Rosetta linguistic data sets. And so effectively, it's a staircase of knowledge, which includes what you need to understand in order to just make sense of a lot of the concepts that we refer to in our daily communication, such as having a house or having a bedroom or in driving a car. These are concepts which, if you don't tie them to some perceptual information, would be very hard to explain to someone who hadn't experienced them. The second step is that in the primer, we teach how to make a computer and how to understand the digital encodings that we then use on the subsequent 21 layers that are digital. And those are essentially DVD format. So there's four layers of analog, 60,000 images, followed by 21 DVD masters, effectively, each is 4.7 gigabytes. And so the entire stack is about 100 gigabytes of highly compressed data. It would decompress to almost 200 gigs in digital, plus these 60,000 images. This staircase of knowledge provides, you know, what we think is at least a good starting point if some recipient in the distant future were to find this, that could teach them how to understand certain level of content without a computer, and then to go more deeply, could teach them either how to make a computer, or if they already have one, at least how to decode and understand the various encodings in the digital layers.
We'll be back with more from Nova Spivak on the left side of the hour.
This is Julie Grobe from the University of Houston Library, home of the Houston Hip Hop Collections, here in the chopped and screwed city of H-Town. You're listening to Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show on WREK Atlanta. All ready.
Today's Lost in the Stacks is called An Archive of Planet Earth. And now, a quote from Isaac Asimov's Foundation Trilogy. We sit here considering the encyclopedia, the all-in-all. We consider the greatest end of science is the classification of past data. It is important, but is there no further work to be done? We're receding and forgetting, don't you see? Here in the periphery, they've lost nuclear power. In Gamma Andromeda, a power plant has undergone meltdown because of poor repairs, and the Chancellor of the Empire complains that nuclear technicians are scarce. And the solution? To train new ones? Never. Instead, they're to restrict nuclear power. And for the third time, don't you see? It's galaxy-wide. It's a worship of the past. Well, let's go ahead and absorb that bummer and file this set under TL789.8.U6.
Rolling Moon by The Chills, before that Planets by Joseph. Songs about extreme locations far away where the record of humanity may persist, thanks to the ARC Mission Foundation.
Our show today is called An Archive of Planet Earth. Our guest is Nova Spivak, co-founder and chairman of the ARC Mission Foundation. We asked Nova which of these, in his view, is the hardest challenge. Is it provisioning the technology, curating the content, or bringing together so many partners and advisors to collaborate with the foundation?
Well, I think we've largely solved the technology problems now. We have several different technologies, including even as well as Nanofiche. We have also new technology for encoding data using DNA molecules. We have many technologies. I think we're pretty strong there. The curated data sets, you know, we started with big open data sets. There's still a lot more to do there. We only sent a fraction, you know, of the Wikipedia. We sent the English Wikipedia, but we should send really all the major language versions side by side, as well as other large curated data sets. Genome data would be a good one, for example. But there's also a lot more data to send them than what's in Project Gutenberg. And to do that, we really hope to partner with libraries that can give us access to one of their copies of various resources in their collections, you know, so that we can go much broader than things which are 50 years old. We're hoping that there are librarians and libraries that would like to join us and could help to contribute some of their collections that we could include in future archives. From a collaboration perspective, as a small nonprofit, we didn't have the resources to really operate as a global organization and involve committees and fly around the world meeting with every university. You had to start somewhere. So we started fairly small with some university advisors and partners. But obviously, to really do this right, we need to expand. We need to have much broader participation. We need to figure out a way to do that and to manage it. We also need to have international participation, where different groups in different countries that really are experts on their subject matter and cultures can actually do the curation and just give us what they think should be sent. Our job is really ultimately to deliver these backups. We don't have to curate them if others do a good job of that. And so I guess from a challenges perspective, the challenge was the technology. That is not the challenge anymore. The challenge now, you know, if I had to name one challenge, it would be really to figure out how to fund an effort like this on a sustainable, ongoing basis through grants and other donations. It's a large effort to back up the planet. You can't do it once. You have to keep doing it because there's always things you missed and there's always new stuff to send and there are new places to put it. And so to really do this and make it a function of civilization, something that we as a civilization, we do, it's going to require a lot of support from a lot of places. The sort of blessing and curse of that level of support is it also starts to politicize things and you get a lot of cooks in the kitchen and it gets harder to make decisions. That's a trade-off, but I believe that the more involvement we get, the better the quality of the output will be. And also it'll be beneficial to people today. It's not only people in millions of years, but by participating in this, I think it builds international and intercultural understanding. It raises awareness of the threats that the world is facing environmentally and in other areas that need to be really taken seriously. And it actually may result in new teaching and learning technologies, for example, the primer and things that we've been developing. So I think there's a lot of opportunity here. Funding is definitely a major question in our minds. We pretty much self-funded, except for some donations in the past. I think as we try to move to a larger scale, we're entering this phase where we're starting to think much more deliberately about how do we make this sustainable so that it can continue, even if we're not here.
I'm excited and hopeful for a time when we go to archive conferences and there's a lunar archivist or something like that. But until that time, I was wondering how might Earthbound archives cultivate this kind of very long-term view and maybe even get your ideas on what the role of more traditional archives is in the age of the billion-year archive.
First of all, you know, we say the billion-year archive because the idea is if you have enough copies in enough places using durable materials, some of them will last for a billion or more years. Making them discoverable is another topic. How are they going to be found? That's another thing we think about. But first, you have to preserve the data to even have a chance of it being found. As far as Earth, which is one of the locations in the Billion Year Archive project, we actually have an initiative to create and store these archives on every continent in multiple locations, some of which might include very deep cave systems that are very hard to access, but last a long time and are likely to be rediscovered. So one aspect of the Earthbound archiving initiative is to make them last a very long time by making them hard for anybody to loot or get to in the near term. But we also think it'd be interesting and educational to put these in places that people can access and interact with today, whether it's museums or schools or libraries. And there are ways to interact with the content. It's not just a static piece of metal. You can actually make an interactive, immersive experience where you can explore what's in this. And that's something that hasn't been done yet, but I think would be really cool. So for archivists here on Earth, we need your help, first of all, in locating really good existing archives that are already scanned that we can easily etch as analog images, Banana Fish, you know, great collections that you can give us, that you have the right to give us for our backup. We're not redistributing to anybody digitally today. We're not redistributing to anybody in analog today who could easily get that data. We're putting these in locations where it's certainly going to be more than 50 years before anybody will access it. For anything that we do make accessible sooner, obviously, that has to be either open data or uncopyrighted, or we have to have the license to do that. And so we think of this as primarily a library where our audience is at least 50 years in the future. And prior to that, there may be certain things we can share, but the majority of what we're building will really not be visible or shareable until at least 50 years in the future, when all present copyrights have expired. But libraries and archivists who have great content that should be preserved, that will be important potentially in the future, that we don't want to lose, that could be useful or informative, we do want to hear from you. We do want to include you. We have the ability to do that. We have the technology to do it. We can give you copies for your use. We also want to make copies to put into this larger library. And so we're very open to that, and we're very open to hearing from people with ideas. We're not billionaires, our funding is limited to really what we either get grants for or can fundraise for, but we're working on that. And I think with more participation, you know, we can do a better job of this. There's also content that could be created, better versions of the primer, for example. So we're definitely interested in hearing from professionals and library scientists and archivists, you know, who have good ideas, good content or skills that they'd like to contribute to the effort.
Nova, thank you so much for taking the time and talking with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This is Lost in the Stacks. Our guest today is Nova Spivak, co-founder and chairman of the ARC Mission Foundation.
File this set under PS3551.S5P7.
That was the song Asimov by Señorita Uva, which is Lady Grape in Inglés. That was a song about visionary, dare we say, foundational futurist. I can't believe someone scripted me a pun. Our show today was called An Archive of Planet Earth. Our guest was Nova Spivak, co-founder and chairman of the ARC Mission Foundation, a nonprofit organization that maintains a billion-year backup of planet Earth.
Hey, Charlie.
Yeah.
As a librarian, what's one item from any collection that you think should be included in a billion-year archive?
Holy cow. That's a really hard question. I mean, a billion years kind of makes everything unimportant. I feel like pictures, it would have to be pictures. Like if I wanted to know something about a billion years ago, it would be what something looked like. I think that's about it. But then I got to worry about the whole eye question. Will whatever reads that have eyes? You know, a picture of the landscape and a skull. That's what I'm going to go with. How about you?
I would say a Twinkie.
Okay, that's a very different direction, but I think that's probably better
than
mine.
It's self-explanatory.
Yeah. I mean, you like Twinkies.
I do like Twinkies. Yeah, I'm reconsidering. But I'm going to go with the picture, the pale blue dot.
Okay. Wendy?
Something that somehow says, I'm sorry,
no,
we tried.
No.
Sorry.
How about an item from a collection? Can you do it? A burnt to the crisp canary. Is that what you're saying?
A floppy disk from nice. The RetroTech lab. I mean, you know, there's no hope for that, but at least it's a cool artifact that someone, maybe creature, can touch.
Matthew, we're building our time capsule. What do you think?
I'm thinking, I like the picture idea, but maybe video. So I don't know if you've ever seen like Koyaanis Katsi, something like that, but less dire. Maybe just a record of like human life and also natural life, the intersection between the two.
I hate to do this to you, but then I have to say, oh, so you mean what? A DVD and a DVD player and a generator and a screen and a...
Well, they already have CDs in the archive, so...
Okay.
It was the Lunar Archive. Isn't that right? It had CDs? Yeah.
Cody, I think you should come over here. I'm going to actually fill time so you can get to the mic and give us an answer before we are done with this segment. Get right up on that thing, man.
I think I would put in a... maybe an episode of this show, Charlie.
Oh, you're very sweet. Yeah. You can still come back even if you're mean to us.
With that, let's roll the credits.
Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, produced by Charlie Bennett, Amit Doshi, Mindy Hagenmeyer, Fred Rasko.
Matthew was our engineer today, and the show was brought to you in part by Blank Books, in which we write our dreams.
That's really nice.
Legal counsel and future creatures with eyes and intelligence
were
provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in
that
Atlanta, Georgia.
That is not nice.
Special thanks to Nova for being on the show. And thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
You can find us online at lostinthestacks.org, and you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and all of those other aggregators that just scrape the feed.
Next week on Lost in the Stacks, we're going to space again.
Nice.
With the Voyager record.
It's time for our last song today, and our guest Nova requested this song to close out the show. It references a famous quote by the legendary pithy philosopher Yogi Berra. Berra lived through tumultuous times that changed in unpredictable ways, which led him to making the famous observation about the future that it ain't what it used to be. So this is The Future Just Ain't What It Used to Be by Meatloaf, right here on Lost in the Stacks. Have a great weekend, everyone. Meatloaf. Yummy.
I never knew so many bad times could follow me so mercilessly.